This week, we began Lent, this preparation for Holy Week, and especially for Easter. And for some of our parishioners, this is an extra special time because they will be baptized and received into our church at the Easter Vigil. The Easter Vigil is on the eve of Easter, and that's when new adult members of the church have traditionally been baptized and confirmed. And this year we are truly blessed because we have two people who will be baptized, and there's another who's already been baptized in the Orthodox Church, and she's becoming Catholic. And so for Ty and Rochelle and Ekaterina, this time of Lent is a very real time of preparation, of learning where God is leading them. And so our whole community, I'm asking all of us to pray for them during this time of Lent, during this time leading up to the Easter Vigil. Today, though, I want to really unpack the second reading. The second reading that we heard today from St. Paul's letter to the Romans is incredibly rich. There's so much in there. I want to take the time to unpack it and see what it means for us today. And so this is going to be, a teaching-heavy homily. St. Paul, in that letter to the Romans, in the part leading up to what we heard today, is talking about the differences between Jews and Greeks. And, that whole section of the letter to the Romans is about this difference between Jews and Greeks. And he's not talking about, ethnic differences or, the language differences or, even the difference between matzo bread and pita bread. That's not what Paul is talking about when he means Jews and Greeks. First of all, by Greeks, he means Roman people who live in the Roman Empire. The Romans were the administrators, the authorities, the political authority at the time, but everyone spoke Greek. And they considered themselves ethnically Greek. So Gentiles and Greeks, Paul uses that interchangeably. And here he talks about, and Paul, who was himself Jewish and a devout Jewish Pharisee at that, but was raised in the Roman city of Tarsus, understands both cultures. But what Paul is contrasting is the salvation for the Jewish people who, some of whom started to follow Jesus, some of whom became what came to be known as Christians, but there were a great number of Jews, the majority of Jewish people, who did not believe that Jesus was the Messiah. So he's contrasting those, the salvation for the Jewish people and their traditional understanding of it, versus salvation for Greeks who start to follow Jesus, who more and more are joining this group of followers. Paul says that as a Jew, he sought salvation by living according to the Jewish commandments and the law set out by Moses, part of which we heard of in the first reading today. But he says that Jesus is the fulfillment of the law, the culmination of the law, the end of the law as the means of justification, he says, but we'll get into that. He says, but that Jesus comes changes everything. So that now Paul says that if you confess with your lips that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And in that sentence alone, there's really a whole lot to delve into. Jesus is Lord. And to Paul, that is a huge deal. When the Jewish people, were in places like Tarsus and in Rome and all over the Roman Empire, the Jewish people were not strictly confined to Israel. And they'd been there for centuries. And those Jewish people had translated what we consider the Old Testament, their Bible. They translated that into Greek. And that translation was completed in 132 BC. And In the Old Testament, the word for God, Yahweh, the name that God gives himself, is used over 6,000 times in the Old Testament. 6,000 times. And when Jewish people, when they read that in the, you know, because you can't say the name of God, you can write it out, but you can't say the name of God. So they would read, instead of Yahweh, they would read Adonai, which means Lord. And so when it was translated into Greek, it was translated as Kyrios, which is the Greek word for Lord. So that's why, you know, this morning we sang Kyrie eleison, Lord have mercy. That's Greek. That's not Latin. That's the Greek part of the Mass. Everybody thinks, we're using Latin. No, that's actually Greek. But the word Adonai in that Greek translation of the Bible is the name for God. Or sorry, Adonai, Kyrios. In the Greek translation, it's the word for God. It means Lord, but it's what they use to substitute for the name of God. And so when Paul says Jesus is Lord, he's actually saying that Jesus is the Jewish God, that he is the one God, not one of many, that he is the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, that you have to let go of all those other false idols and cling only to God. And it's the Jewish God. And for Greeks, that's a big thing to say. For Gentiles, that's a big thing. Now, he also says that you have to believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. Believe in your heart. And that isn't a sentimental feeling for Paul. He's not talking about your emotions. The heart, for Paul, is sort of the essence of your being. It's your intellect, your will, and your emotions all rolled into one. So we would, you know, refer to as, you know, body, mind, and soul, almost. It's like you have to believe with all your being that God raised Jesus from the dead. And the implication of that is that Jesus is not actually dead, that he was raised from the dead, that he is still alive. In a glorified way, yes, but he is still alive. But the implication is that you can enter into a relationship with Jesus because he is still alive. And so the relationship that matters is your relationship with Jesus, not your relationship with the commandments and the law. That was under the old way. You know, it was how you related to the commandments and the law. Did you follow all the commandments? Did you adhere to every law? But it's through the relationship with God, with the Lord, with the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, that we are saved. Now, that does not mean that Paul, who was a Jew, abandoned the commandments. He lived by them. And nor can we, Gentiles, abandon them. But our relationship to the commandments changes. We don't look at the commandments as the means to salvation. Jesus is the means to salvation. And our relationship, and it's through our relationship with him, with the Lord, who is the author of the commandments, that we follow the commandments. We follow the commandments because Jesus, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who gave us the commandments, gave them to us. But it's because of Jesus that we follow the commandments. Not, we don't follow the commandments in order to be saved. And this is an important concept. This is an important distinction. Because too often, even today, even as modern day Christians, we keep falling back into the notion that we are saved if we keep the commandments. And this is exactly what Paul is warning us against. You know, too often we think, you know, that, oh, as long as I keep all the commandments, I'll get to heaven. I'm a good person, I'll get to heaven, and so that's the key. No. Paul is saying you cannot actually be justified under the commandments. You cannot be saved through the commandments. And you think, well, you know, I've been pretty good. I live by most of those commandments. You know, I haven't murdered anybody. I haven't stolen anything. You know, I tell a white lie here and there, but, you know, nothing really serious. I haven't I honored my mother and father. I haven't coveted anyone, you know, or anything. You know, I haven't been envious of other people. I'm a pretty good person. Well, but there's that first commandment. And when we really think about that first commandment, then we start to, and then things get a little dicey. Then we're trying to find some wiggle room. The first commandment is you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and you must have no other gods before him. And when we think about what that means in our lives, then we realize, wait a minute, have I really put God first? Have I really loved God with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength? Or has there been times where that has waned? Have there been moments in my life where I put other things, my own well-being, my own desires in front of God? Have I made money into an idol? Have I made work into an idol? Have I made another person into an idol? You know, most of our TV involves something with the word idol in there anyway, you know, like on TV. So it's sort of like we put tons of other things as idols before God. Are we truly able to say that we have loved the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength all the time? And that we have never put anything else before them? We're not going to be able to be saved through the commandments. But if we say that Jesus is Lord, if we believe that we can enter into a relationship with him, and we do that, and it's through our relationship with him that we enter into the commandments, that's different. It's through a person. And through a person, we can always go back to and say, Lord, I'm trying to rededicate myself to these things. I know I've slipped up. I know I've messed up. I know I haven't been able to love my neighbor as myself all the time. I know I haven't been able to love my enemies. That one has been tough for me, you know? And we can go back time and time again to that person and seek reconciliation, seek to be renewed in him and renewed in our desire to keep those commandments. And this Lent, you know, we need to not think about so much about have I kept all of those commandments, and to think more about am I renewing my relationship with the author of the commandments? Am I rededicating myself to Jesus, to confessing with my lips that Jesus is Lord and that putting him at the center of my life? Am I rededicating, am I using this time of preparation for Easter, the time when we celebrate the resurrection? Am I using this time to be able to really deepen my relationship with the risen Lord, who is still alive and wants a relationship with me? This is so important. This is actually the good news of salvation. This is what, when we talk about the good news of salvation, it's actually this, that you no longer need to find salvation through the law and the commandments, that it's no longer through the 600 and whatever it is, laws that the Jewish people had, or the commandments that were given to them, but it's through Jesus Christ that we are saved, through a person who is still alive, who still desires our good. And this is so important that Paul reiterates it after he says that, you know, we have to believe, profess, you have to say that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God has risen him from the dead. He goes on to reiterate that one believes with the heart and so is justified, and one confesses with the lips, with the mouth, and so is saved. Paul is saying that salvation involves both inward belief and outward proclamation. It's a both and thing. It isn't an either or. Believing goes hand in hand with proclaiming, and they are inseparable. And this passage that we just heard in that second reading from the letter to the Romans, it ends with everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. I wish they'd included the next line as well. The very next line of that in that passage says, but how are they to call on one in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in one of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone to proclaim him? Believing in Jesus, proclaiming him Lord, go hand in hand. You know, even Moses in that first reading says that every time we come before the altar, we should proclaim all that God has done for us. Last week in my homily, I said that even though we're followers of Jesus, we should still be leading others. Even though we're always students learning from Jesus, we should still be teaching. That's essentially what St. Paul is saying now. Even as we inwardly grow in our relationship with Jesus, we should also be outwardly proclaiming that he is Lord. Ty, Rochelle, Katerina, those three people who will be entering the Catholic Church this Easter, they've needed other witnesses in their life. They've needed people who tell them what a relationship with Jesus has meant to them, what it looks like to them. And they wouldn't have gotten to this point unless they'd heard about Jesus, not just from some one person, but from a whole host of people. You know, they've spent this past year learning and growing in their faith, learning what it means to be a disciple. They've had people talking to them about their relationship with Jesus. They've been learning what that means, what it means to pray, what it means to unburden yourself, to bring Jesus into your life, to try and put him at the center of your life. They've been learning what it means to be a disciple, a follower of Jesus. But they're also learning what it means to witness to others about Jesus. This Easter, they're going to be witnesses to us when they stand in the church and profess their desire to enter in, to becoming Catholic. But they are learning to articulate who Jesus is to them in order to share that with others so that others may hear, others may believe and call on him themselves. This Lent, as they prepare to call on Jesus, as they prepare to believe in their heart and profess with their mouth that Jesus is Lord, let's join with them, not just simply by praying for them, but let's truly join with them in taking this time to deepen our relationship with the Lord, the one through whom salvation comes, both for Jews and Greeks, for Gentiles, for whom salvation comes to the whole world. This Lent, in your prayer life, truly enter into a personal relationship with Jesus in that prayer life. Read the Word of God. Read Scripture. You know, maybe even read St. Paul's letter to the Romans in its entirety, not just a little snippet here or there. It's actually St. Paul lays out the doctrine of the Catholic Church as he understood it at that time in that letter. It is a terribly important letter for the early church, and it's not some zipped off email that he wrote to somebody. This is thought out. There's a lot of meat on the bone. There's like 16 chapters. You can really go through it this Lent and meditate on it and use this in your prayer life. But Lent really is about committing to following Jesus more closely and professing him more boldly. This is what Lent is about. More than all the rules and the laws and the commandments, it's about the author of all creation, not just the commandments. It's about professing with our mouth that Jesus is Lord and believing in our heart that he is alive and wants a relationship with us.